This is MSO News Sports, and we are joined by Senator Brendan Crighton from Lynn. And Senator, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bill. Really appreciate you having me again.
Well, we'd love to hear from you and get caught up on the issues and what you're working on and what's happening at the State House. First up, I think something relatively new for you. You're on a, is it a joint committee? I think it's just a Senate committee on juvenile justice. And, you know, that was such a huge topic a couple of years ago in the legislature. So where is that juvenile justice taking us here in 2024?
No, thanks, Bill. Yeah, so it's a new committee that the Senate president created just on the Senate side. It's the Senate Committee on Juvenile and Emerging Adult Justice. And, you know, we're trying to take a look at a wide range of topics related to our young people and how they interact with the criminal justice system. I think one of the bills that's gotten a lot of press lately, though I should say this committee does not have any bills before it. It's, you know, most of these bills that deal with the subject matter are before the Joint Committee on Judiciary, which has House and Senate members. But for the purposes of our committee, it's to take a deep dive into some of these subject matters and, you know, have hearings, site visits, and really flush out some of these issues, not necessarily related to any one particular bill, but one bill that has been, a top of conversation certainly has been the Raise the Age bill. So back in 2013, the legislature raised the age of criminal majority to up until your 18th birthday. So 17-year-olds from age, when you turn 17 up to your 18 prior to that were charged in the adult system and would go to, your traditional correctional facility with adults rather than the DYS system. We changed that back in 2013, and the results over the last 10 years have been, really promising. I think we've had significant reductions in recidivism among those that, go to a DYS facility rather than going to prison. Obviously, there's a ton of brain science out there about our brains not fully, at least the risk-taking portions of our brains, not being fully developed until the age of 24 or 25. So, someone at the age of 18, oftentimes, these kids are still, in high school, make a mistake, get caught up in the adult criminal justice system, and it's difficult sometimes to get out of that cycle there. And we think the DYS facilities for, kids age 18 going up until their 21st birthday would be better suited in DYS. So again, not taking away accountability. This is more of a bill that recognizes we have better outcomes for younger folks in settings when they're with their peers and they have access to programs, rather than, in the traditional adult system. So, anyways, long answer for a simple question, but, the committee is going to take a look at a wide range of issues, hear from a wide range of stakeholders, but no particular legislation before us, just really want to amplify this issue, which is, certainly, on the minds of a lot of folks.
Yeah, I think maybe some of our listeners might remember it was just several weeks ago that the Celtics got involved with this piece with that committee, right? The Celtics.
That's right. Yeah. So we had the Celtics organization has been pretty involved with this and other juvenile justice bills for the last few years, and we had several meetings at the State House where the Celtics, the presidents, the owners, Jaylen Brown, and other people in the organization came in and spent the day with us and went through the reasons why they care about it. They got to hear from some young people that had issues within the system. So again, part of it's about raising awareness. When I hear from folks that are opposed to this bill, which I should have mentioned too, it's my piece of legislation, when they say they're opposed to it, they're not opposed for anything that's actually in the bill. I think people think this is taking away accountability. It's not. It's just recognizing what settings are best for the best outcomes for our individuals, which would then be best outcomes for society overall. So I'm excited to work on it. The work has been put in long before I became the bill sponsor. Folks have been trying to do this for the last decade or so, but, trying to play a role and get this moving forward.
I don't want to belabor this topic too much, Brendan, but you mentioned stakeholders and hearing from others. Give me an example of, a stakeholder or two that your committee would like to hear from on whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had some, in our hearing already, we had folks that deal with brain science. We've had former justices and folks in the legal community, different programs that deal with formerly incarcerated youth that have come out. But certainly, all ends of law enforcement from, the Executive Office of Public Safety. I've had conversations with Secretary Reedy about it and his team and, wanted to get more engaged with them at the table as well as with our district attorneys, our sheriffs, go out and see some of these facilities as well in person, give committee members an opportunity to see the different settings and how they work. So, again, not just on the Raise the Age bill, but on, all of these issues, I think it's important to see in person and to make sure that even when we have folks that may disagree with us, that we're having those conversations at the table. So it is a new committee, and, it hasn't even been a year in existence to this point. So we're still kind of charting our course a bit. But so far, the conversations and meetings have been really beneficial.
All right, I'm going to switch the topics here. I think if you were do one of those word searches or word splashes and you typed in Lynn, MBTA, transportation, Brendan Crichton would come up. You know what I'm saying? That would be the next word or two that would be coming up on those searches. So give us an update if you could, Senator. I know there's the electrification bill that I believe is moving, but there's some other things. So let's start there. Where do we stand with that? And that would be for the commuter rail that I think you've talked about in the past.
Yeah, so we've been trying to electrify our commuter rail, but also the whole commuter rail system for the last, 4 or 5 years. Obviously, folks are familiar with the plan going back to like the 1920s to extend the Blue Line to Lynn. More recently, we took a look at, and I was always a supporter of that effort, but took a look at our existing right-of-way and how could we get rapid transit to the North Shore faster and in a more realistic way. So again, not to, close the door on the Blue Line extension to Lynn, but recognizing the amount of land takings, the environmental issues, the costs associated with it are, a bit out of reach at this point. With electrifying our Newburyport-Rockport line, we get more frequent service, which as a result would, lead to lower fares, more subway-type fares, and the ability to have different stations. So certainly Salem State would love to have a station on their campus. We have, the connection potential at Wonderland, so you could connect from the commuter rail to the, more traditional Blue Line subway there, and then down at Everett would like a stop by the Encore Casino as well, and a lot of those businesses that are there. So you really have this line that is, more meant for an older form of commuting habits. It's not recognizing the change that's occurred along this stretch in the potential it could have as, more rapid transit. So we have a bill that would, more aggressively push the Commonwealth to invest in electric vehicles or electric, trains. And it's certainly a big part of it. I think this administration's already, I don't know that they need to be compelled to. We're, certainly going to push for that legislation to be passed. A lot of our efforts right now are on the investment side. The funding process for the MBTA is something called the CIP. It's a capital investment plan. That's ongoing right now, where the board and the MBTA will look at all the different needs they have and prioritize how they're going to spend capital money. We certainly want to have a place in that plan. Last year, we were able through a ton of support and help from a wide range of stakeholders locally, make a strong case that we need to get electrification fast-tracked, that we need to start to build a system. And, we made some progress. I'd like to build off that progress again this year. A lot of it gets kind of technical, like we're looking for design money and other things like that. But you really have to start, I wish we could just go out and buy trains and throw them on the tracks. We really have to start to plan out the system, also taking into account, how much the grid can handle and other things. The Fairmont line in Boston is in a similar situation, so we're kind of teaming up with those folks. We have similar arguments to be made about environmental justice and how this corridor could help ease congestion, but also improve public health up and down the stretch by electrifying that rail. So it's a really exciting time. Things take a long time. I started working at the State House back in 2005, and It's funny, some of the things I started as an aide, you know, brand new to the state I was working on back then are just coming to fruition now. But we got to remain vigilant and keep working with this administration to get it done. And I think on the other piece of transportation, something, you know, again, it's taken a long time to get there. Tom McGee, when he was senator, really got, you know, did all the work to get this in place, but getting the ferry back to Lynn. So we were able to, under Senator McGee, get a ferry, get a terminal, you know, a ton of money, ton of, you know, political capital, and really pushing this forward and making the case for it. He was successful with that. But when Governor Baker came in, he did not share that vision. Thankfully, last summer we were able to return service. You know, it's meant as a two-year, you know, kind of a mitigation for the Sumner Tunnel closure. But given our ridership last year, I think we've demonstrated that this should be, you know, permanent, that it should be closer to year-round service. And we're excited to, we're having conversations now, but when that will start up again, hopefully soon. But the delegation is fighting hard for that. I think it needs to be part of our transportation infrastructure on the North Shore.
Brendan, I want to circle back because I thought I heard something that I really hadn't heard before regarding the electrification, because I kind of always looked at electrification as kind of taking the trains that we have now and turning them into electric trains, like you would turn a bus into an electric bus, but it would still be running the same route. But what I'm hearing is more of a blue line, green line kind of scenario moving up and down the North Shore instead of the commuter rail as we know it today, which would, as you mentioned, you know, maybe afford additional stops or maybe some, I'm just making this up now, but, you know, moving the tracks different places here and there to make, you know, more appropriate stops, if you will. Am I right?
Wouldn't move. No, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Bill. You're right to a sense that the vehicles that we will be using are dramatically different than the commuter rail trains that you see today that are, you know, diesel locomotives. They're right. Spewing emissions into our environment and particulate matters into our neighborhoods that are really damaging health locally. So these would be clean. They, you know, can run on catenary, so the wires hanging above, like you see on a subway. There's also the technology now that, while it's only been done for freight up to this point, that different states are starting to utilize, where it's kind of a hybrid of the two. So it's battery electric, is, you know, what they call it. So you would have a battery that could, you know, when it's not running on catenary, keep the train running, and then when it's on catenary, you know, continue that way. So that's probably the model we're looking at. You know, certainly, you know, stringing up catenary up and down the line is an option. You know, we're also looking at, like, how quickly can we get, you know, and capitalize on some of these opportunities in actually, you know, even if we've got a pilot to get going right now, it would be tremendously beneficial, even if it was on the Fairmont line, to show folks, hey, this is what the future of your commuter rail could look like, to start to get buy-in there. They start so much, they start really quickly and they slow down really quickly, whereas right now we have these big, heavy trains, they take forever to start, forever to slow down. So a lot of that frequency that you could have is lost. As far as the infill stations, so I mentioned Salem State, Wonderland, and Everett, it would be on the existing right-of-way track. For Wonderland, you know, you're looking at, you know, 300, 400 yards away from Wonderland. You know, there's certainly connections, I mean, whether you're at the airport or other parts of the subway system, where you have longer stretches than that, where we could make a connection through, you know, some enclosed type system there, and the federal government's actually been, Congresswoman Clark has been working hard to secure funding for that piece of it. I think having that connection at Wonderland, I think having a station in Salem, having a station at Encore would make sense to help move our workforce around much easier.
That's right, and I was neglecting really to thinking that they're starting at North Station to begin with, so that works, right? You know, so I'm sorry, yeah, so. So it would kind of parallel Wonderland to some extent, I would suppose, in a way.
But certain, I mean, they have such frequent stops over there in, you know, different neighborhoods. Ours, you know, it would still, you wouldn't have nearly as many stops, but you could keep that frequency. So you're looking at trains every, you know, 7 to 10 minutes versus, you know, I mean, it depends on the time of day, obviously. But our existing commuter rail does have better frequency than most, but it's still not where it needs to be, and the price point needs to be lower. Our residents aren't going to pay $7 for a one-way trip. It should be a subway-type fare.
All right, got it. All right, so there's transportation. I just want to have you address for us the issue regarding school funding. Now, Lynn is involved with working to fund and build a new Pickering Middle School. Obviously, elementary schools are you know, kind of on the docket as well, moving forward. But it's a massive ask, if you will, to make all this happen. So where do you stand at the State House with kind of redoing that funding, the school building fund formula?
Thanks for bringing it up. It's a huge issue. You know, this past year, our goal has been to keep Pickering on track and to make sure that we could get the funding it needed. Obviously, costs have gone up considerably, you know, through inflation and just materials costs alone. So a lot of schools weren't put in a position where, you know, they no longer had the funding to get done what they thought they could. So we had some legislative solutions in our budget last year and put $100 million from the Fair Share Amendment towards helping some of those schools, which, you know, goes a long way. It's actually for, you know, a number of municipalities. And then the MSBA board, we worked very closely with the treasurer and the MSBA to make sure that, you know, the reimbursement rates were more reflective of actual construction costs. So we were able to keep Pickering moving forward. It was a very difficult process. That being said, we're talking about 1 year in time, one school in our, you know, our district. The longer term picture is that we have a funding formula that, worked for a while. I think it was the MSBA, the creation of it was a good thing to kind of depoliticize it and to get communities in a path, on a path to building new schools. That being said, for districts like Lynn with such old infrastructure, with, you know, 12 schools, 13 if you count Pickering, over 100 years old, and many others close to that age, we can't just do one school every, you know, 7-10 years. We need to aggressively pursue this, and unfortunately there's not enough funding to do it, and the formula doesn't benefit a community like Lynn the way it should. We certainly don't have the budget to build multiple schools at the same time right now. Like, we're putting a ton of city money towards Pickering, we have legislation. I'm not going to dive into all the details on the funding formula, but the bottom line is, I think that for communities like Lynn that have such an old infrastructure, that have rising student population, many districts are seeing, you know, population of students going down. We're seeing it rise considerably. We're in a unique situation. The role of the state government, you know, is to help communities meet, create equal standards across the entire Commonwealth for education. Everyone should have an equal access to high quality education. It's in our constitution to do so. But if, you know, Lynn could be getting a ton of operating money to help us, but if we don't have the, you know, schools, functioning school buildings to educate our students, it's also putting our teachers at a great disadvantage as well, and putting families in very difficult situations where, you know, they may have a neighborhood school, but they don't feel comfortable sending their kids to it. So we're working closely as a delegation, Rep. Cato, Rep. Capano, Rep. Armini, and along with, you know, the mayor of Lynn to try to tackle this, and working with our state partners. But it's very challenging because, you know, I think there are several communities that, you know, feel this need, but you have a limited pot of funds and a system that's been in place for, you know, over 20 years at this point. So change is hard, but we're going to keep making the case and keep raising this issue. I feel like we're building momentum, but we also don't have the luxury of time to wait, given, you know, the age of these buildings currently. So
I know you look at.
I've given you very long-winded answers here today. I apologize.
No, but I mean, basically, Brendan, what it comes down to, I mean, you look at, I like to look at sometimes the city of Beverly, new high school, new middle school in the last decade. And they're working on elementary schools and so on. But you're right, you can't get it done. Like, when was the last new school in Lynn? You're working on Pickering now. Was it the Marshall Middle School?
Yeah, we had Marshall, and then, you know, we did have it go to a ballot for two new middle schools in Lynn. And
that's right.
That's the problem, too. Like, the city only has so many resources to put towards this, so it's like, it's not like the city's not paying anything. We're paying a lot towards this, but sometimes we don't have that money. And if you have to go to voters in Lynn right now, you know, people are struggling. It's going to be very hard to get a vote for an override or a debt exclusion when people are already struggling. So it shouldn't come to that. It shouldn't be a political thing. It should be, let's look at, you know, the state of our buildings in each of these communities and have that play a big factor in how much, you know, money communities get for this. There's a couple of ways we can tinker with it, but at the end of the day, this is something we feel a great deal of urgency about. And I I hope whether or not you have a school or a school district like ours, that you would recognize the overall benefit to the Commonwealth when we have functioning school. I mean, it's certainly a moral issue, but also when you look at it in terms of our workforce and our, you know, having an educated constituency that has access to these resources, I mean, I think it's a good thing for the entire Commonwealth.
But, you know, as you said earlier, one new school every 7 years isn't going to cut it, or 10 years or something like that. That's for sure. And so you need,
at some point we'll have schools closing. You can't keep putting Band-Aids on buildings that are over 100 years old. I mean, I think we are an outlier. Like, we always think Windsor are unique. But if you look at, I mean, we met the other day with the mayor and just going through the lists of our schools and looking at the ages, you know, for some communities, you know, they're going to MSBA, like, they're talking about a building that's 40 years old, and, like, we got to replace this, like, we kill for 40-year-old buildings here. So, anyways, it's an ongoing struggle, but one that we've definitely built a lot of momentum on, so we'll just keep at it.
You know, they can move historical, I don't mean to make light of this, but here I go, but you can, they have historical preservation pieces where you could, maybe you could take a school from another community built in the 70s and bring it over. I mean, that's not fun. That's not funny. I get it. What's that?
If we don't joke around every now and then, we'd go crazy in this business.
No, I hear you. No, but it's like you do need an emergency, you know, circuit breaker kind of thing for 20 years to get back up online here, to be quite honest with you, as you know. So that takes a lot of work and a lot of change. I want to just jump to one more topic with you, Senator, and that would be the housing bond bill that is in both the House and the Senate at this point. You tell me, but what is that about?
They had a hearing recently. It's still before the Joint Committee on Housing, to my knowledge. But it's a great bill. It's, you know, $1.83 billion of, you know, it's borrowing. Some of it's not direct cash, so, like, the administration will have to, you know, decide how they, you know, what they prioritize out of that significant chunk of money. But it'd be dedicating to housing production and preservation. So. Which is, you know, one of the reasons we have some of the highest rents and cost of home ownership in the country is that we don't have enough housing. So a huge chunk of that money would go to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. So $800 million goes there. So that creates or preserves affordable housing. So, you know, certainly, you know, Massachusetts is no longer affordable, even communities like Lynn that used to be. So making sure that we're building and preserving affordable units is huge. Certainly trying to support new construction as well. There's $425 million for Housing Stabilization and Investment Fund. I won't go through every bullet point on here, but the idea is we need to preserve housing, we need to build more housing, and we need to do so in a way that allows every resident in the Commonwealth to be able to afford it. You know, different. Certainly, we want to help our workforce as well. Like, it's not all about affordable. It's not all about market rate. It's a mix of all of it. So, you know, wanting to support middle-income housing as well. Everyone, I firmly believe housing is a human right. It's something that we need to protect. And over the course of 50 years or so, Commonwealth is, and to be fair, a lot of the country has really let this thing spiral out of control. So we've passed a lot of good things recently, some really strong housing bills and investments recently. But this definitely would be, depending on how it, you know, gets debated out, it could, you know, could be a historic piece of legislation to really infuse some funding where we need it.
Well, Senator, I will let you go, but if there's anything else you wanted to mention or share that I didn't ask you about that you do want to mention quickly that you might have thought of, feel free to do it now if you'd like.
Next time I'll come prepared and I'll think of an extra thing. I don't have anything.
No, that's fine. No.
You covering this certainly, and you know, we'll have updates. We'll be taking up the budget soon, so that'll be exciting. To granted, you know, revenues are down a bit, so it's a little more sobering of a year than we've seen. But we'd love to come back at some point and update you on how that goes sometime in the summer.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Senator, thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Take care.
Yep, Senator Brendan Crighton with us from Lynn here on MSO News Sports.com.